Can we just acknowledge that Truist Park is the dumbest name ever? Yes, I realize of all the news to begin this program with today, that is probably not the most urgent, but it just still, even 24 hours later, it is aggravating the stew out of me that the geniuses at Truist would decide, hey, let's name the let's tell everyone we're going to come up with a name that's going to excite everybody. And everybody sits around saying, hey, maybe we can get Hank Aaron Park or Bobby Cox Field or something. And what do? They name it after themselves. What a bunch of liars. Never trust the people at the bank. What a bunch of liars. And then they had the audacity to come out and say that they focus group this, they field tested it, they got some sort of rate of return on it, that it was a great idea. Everybody loved it. Man, people loved this name. It was perfect. They could have brought everybody in Georgia, in the southeast of the United States together. And instead, they decided to go with Truist Park. Whoever came up with this name should be dragged out into the little area of the battery outside the front gates of the field and flogged with wet spaghetti noodles. And the idiot who came forward and said, well, they tested it with the crowd and it was a fan favorite, should have the meatball shoved up his nose. It is absolutely ridiculous that they went this way. I mean, we shouldn't be surprised, but the problem is that they built it up as if it was going to be something spectacular and something great and grand, and everybody in Georgia, they're just going to love the name. No, it's stupid. But you know, there is a side benefit to this. Truist Park. What are the initials? TP. No, we're not going to toilet paper the field. No, we're going to the TP. To root for the Braves and do the tomahawk chop. Yes, that's what it is. Moving forward, we're going to the teepee to root for the Braves. We're going to do the tomahawk chop. We're going to take our tomahawks into the field, whether or not these little politically correct nimbobs decide that we can or can't. We're going to go in with our tomahawk chops to root for the Braves at the teepee. And from here on out, that's just as I have decided to refer to the airport in Atlanta as Two Dead Mayors International Airport. We're going to refer to this as the teepee. And we will all be happy, and we will forget about it. Now, who is not happy? I will tell you who's not happy. Van Jones last night, the CNN debate, it didn't go so well. Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders had a meltdown. Man, the Bernie bros are out to burn CNN to the ground. We will get to that. We got a lot of stuff here. We've also got some folks coming up today. My buddy Cole Muzio from the Family Policy Alliance in Georgia at the bottom of this hour is going to join me to talk about the state legislature meeting. At the bottom of the next hour, Congressman Jody Heiss is going to join me to talk about impeachment, which will be happening today. So we need to deal with impeachment. We need to deal with the president's rally last night. We need to deal with the Democratic debate. I want to begin with the full discussion from Van Jones. We've got the clip, but you know, and then I saw a more expansive clip of it, and I really want to play this longer exchange between this is Anderson Cooper and Van Jones last night after the Democratic debate, if they'll play it. Well, maybe they won't because the internet has decided to be flaky. Okay, let me play this clip and I'll get the longer one. This is Van Jones.
But that was, as a progressive, to see those two have that level of vitriol was very dispiriting. And I want to say that tonight for me was dispiriting.
We are
the Democrats
back.
Have to do better than what we saw tonight. There was nothing I saw tonight that would be able to take Donald Trump out, and I want to see a Democrat in the White House as soon as possible. There was nothing tonight that, if you're looking at this thing, you say any of these people are prepared for what Donald Trump is going to do to us, and to see further division tonight is very dispiriting.
Yes, it is. Now, here's the longer clip.
We are back here in Des Moines, Iowa, talking about the debate that was. Van, was it different than you? It was much different than you had, than a lot of us.
I have to just say, you know, I came away feeling worried for the Democratic Party. I felt like tonight was a night that they were going to all put the fireworks out there. You're going to see the best of the best. And it just felt like a big bowl of cold oatmeal. And I got to say this, I missed Andrew Yang tonight. I missed Cory Booker.
All right, who wins the drink?
And I missed Cory Booker. And I miss Kamala Harris, and I miss Castro. I miss some of those voices and some of those issues of immigration and criminal justice. There's something that this party's got to figure out. How can it light that fire again? This felt like drudgery tonight. It shouldn't feel this way close to one of the most important elections in the country.
From your vantage point, watching that, no one on that stage, in your mind, walked away as that's the person who can go toe-to-toe.
I think about it every day, places like Oakland and Philadelphia, whatever. Can any of those people get excited about what I saw tonight? And I don't see it. And I have to be honest about it. I don't see it.
Wow. A bowl of cold oatmeal on that stage last night. That sums it up from Van Jones. There were some fireworks on stage last night, but let me just cut to the chase. We got a lot of sound bites I do want to play, but let me cut to the chase here. Joe Biden was helped tremendously by that debate last night. He actually talked less than all the other candidates on stage except Tom Steyer. Amy Klobuchar, Elizabeth Warren. Elizabeth Warren dominated in talking. Bernie Sanders second, Amy Klobuchar next. Joe Biden was second from the last in time talk, but that worked to his advantage. It worked to his advantage in part because he kept stumbling on the stage.
And I think it's a mistake to pull out the small number of troops. The reason he made the strike was because our embassies were about to be bombed. I would not meet with absent preconditions, instead of poking our eye and poking our finger in the eye of all our friends by stealing our intellectual property, their corporate state system to our significant disadvantage of anyone running up here in this race. Reduce the cost of drug prices. It sets up, it allows all the drug companies, it allows you to Medicare to negotiate. It should be free universal infant care. But here's the deal. Over 500 miles a day, 250 miles a day, there's no choice but for Nancy Pelosi that I think about the American people. I headed up the Recovery Act, which put more money into moving away from fossil fuels to solar and wind energy. If the vast majority believe their children will never reach the stage that they read, they've reached an economic security.
Every time he talked, he stumbled. Now, that was a montage putting it all together, just so you get a sense of it. He stumbled throughout. So it was probably good that he didn't talk the most. And then there was the Bernie Elizabeth Warren controversy.
Senator Sanders, you call yourself a Democratic socialist, but more than two-thirds of voters say they are not enthusiastic about voting for a socialist. Doesn't that put your chances of beating Donald Trump at risk?
Nope, not at all. And that is because the campaign that we are going to run will expose the fraudulency of who Donald Trump is. Donald Trump is corrupt. He is a pathological liar. And he is a fraud. Now, when Trump talks about socialism, what he talks about is giving hundreds of billions of dollars in tax breaks and subsidies to the fossil fuel industry. Donald Trump is a businessman, received $800 million in tax breaks and subsidies to build luxury housing. My democratic socialism says health care is a human right. We're going to raise the minimum wage to $15 an hour. We're going to make public colleges and universities tuition free. We're going to have a Green New Deal and create up to $20 million saving the planet for our children and our grandchildren. We are going to take on the greed and corruption of the pharmaceutical industry and the insurance company. That is what democratic socialism is about, and that will win this election.
Oh, we're going to talk about the Bernie bros and the James O'Keefe undercover footage. I actually clicked on the wrong clip there. I thought it was the different one, the one I wanted to play. But that gets to Sanders doubling down on this. Elizabeth Warren agrees with him on much, but isn't willing to embrace the Democratic Socialist label. And now they're throwing him under the bus. Sanders, the controversy with Elizabeth Warren came up. Listen to this.
CNN reported yesterday that, and Senator Warren confirmed in a statement, that in 2018, you told her that you did not believe that a woman could win the election. Why did you say that?
Well, as a matter of fact, I didn't say it.
Stop. Why did you say that?
And I don't want to waste a whole lot of time on this, because this is what Donald Trump and maybe some of the media want. Anybody knows me knows that it's incomprehensible that I would think that a woman could not be president of the United States. Go to YouTube today. There's a video of me 30 years ago talking about how a woman could become president of the United States. In 2015, I deferred, in fact, to Senator Warren. There was a movement to draft Senator Warren to run for president. And you know what? I said, stayed back. Senator Warren decided not to run, and I did run afterwards. Hillary Clinton won the popular vote by 3 million votes. How could anybody in a million years not believe that a woman could become president of the United States? And let me be very clear. If any of the women on this stage or any of the men on this stage win the nomination, I hope that's not the case. I hope it's me. But if they do, I will do everything in my power to make sure that they are elected in order to defeat the most dangerous president in the history of our country.
So, Senator Sanders, I do want to be clear here. You're saying that you never told Senator Warren that a woman could not win the election.
That is correct.
And, well, CNN is under fire because they acted like they didn't believe him.
In order to defeat the most dangerous president in the history of our country.
So, Senator Sanders, I do want to be clear here. You're saying that you never told Senator Warren that a woman could not win the election.
That is correct.
Senator Warren, what did you think when Senator Sanders told you a woman could not win the election?
Wow. So, Senator Sanders, just to be clear, you're saying you never told her that. That is correct. I never told her that. So, Senator Warren, when he told you this, listen to the crowd.
I disagreed. Bernie is my friend, and I am not here to try to fight with Bernie. But look, this question about whether or not a woman can be president has been raised, and it's time for us to attack it head on. And I think the best way to talk about who can win is by looking at people's winning record. So, can a woman beat Donald Trump? Look at the men on this stage. Collectively, they have lost 10 elections. The only people on this stage who have won every single election that they've been in are the women. Amy,
so
and
true.
Me.
Oh, she went there. Well, listen, I mean, CNN's got to do this because Bernie is now ahead in the polls and everybody's starting to freak out. Nobody actually recognizes Elizabeth Warren can win at this point. She can't. But they got to stop Bernie Sanders because they're still privately freaked out about the Jeremy Corbyn thing in Great Britain. So over to Joe Lockhart, President Clinton's former press secretary. He continuing on CNN now this morning.
Bernie Sanders probably had the most difficult night because I think the people who matter most, who care the most about this electability issue and women's not being electable are women. And I can't imagine any woman watching last night and saying, I believe Bernie. I think people believe Elizabeth. And his explanation was not great. But I think there's some peril in this for Warren, particularly at the end where there appeared to be a little bit of lack of graciousness. There's a reason people haven't gone after Bernie Sanders. You know, this is two elections in a row where people have made the decision to, you know, not really attack him because his supporters are very committed to him.
They are very committed to him. Did you know that 16% of Bernie bros, they call them, Bernie bros in Wisconsin wound up voting for Donald Trump when Hillary Clinton was the nominee? That's enough to hand the election over to Donald Trump in that state. And in fact, in a lot of those states, they wound up voting for Donald Trump. It's crazy, crazy. And the Bernie bros are something else. We've got the James O'Keefe one. I got to be careful about playing the audio because there's so much profanity by this guy. If you're unfamiliar with Project Veritas, they do a lot of undercover exposés. James O'Keefe leads them. And this Bernie bro, who's one of his field coordinators, basically saying that Stalin had gulags and they were a good thing. They've been mischaracterized by people. They were actually to re-educate the rich people, make them break rocks for a few years. And guess what? They realized they were poor, too, and what they had done to other people. And essentially, I mean, he didn't essentially say, he actually said, if you get in the way of the revolution, you're going to be killed, physically actually murdered. They're going to murder you. And if Bernie's not the nominee in Detroit, they're going to, or in Milwaukee, rather, they're going to burn the city to the ground. This is a Bernie bro. And this is very typical for what you hear from the Bernie Sanders supporters out there. And the media, of course, has chosen to ignore that. But for how long will they? Because they really do blame the Bernie bros for Donald Trump getting elected in part. I mean, I realize they blame Comey, they blame Russia, but they really also blame the Bernie bros. How long before the media decides they got to take these people out as an virus within the Democratic Party? I suspect we're going to see the media turn on them. Notice how none of them have yet brought up Bernie Sanders writing rape fantasies. That's coming if this keeps up. That is absolutely coming if this keeps up.
Honest news and conservative views.
Never separated from the truth.
It's the Eric Erickson Show.
Hello there. This hour of the program is brought to us by our friends at First Liberty of Georgia. Could not do the program without them, and you probably, once you've used them, can't do business without them ever again. They're great people. If you're in charge of a business, own a business, and want to grow your business, and you need access to capital, but you don't want to go to some stupid corporately branded something or other with a crap name like Truist, but actually want to go to decent, good people... I'm sorry. I'm still mad about this stadium name. But you don't want to use a bank and a bank bureaucracy and the geniuses there who come up with stupid names. Go to the Frost family. They're wonderful people. They're out of Noonan. If you're listening anywhere in the nation, they can help you, not just Georgia. But the website is firstlibertyga.com. They're a building and loan. They make their own lending decisions. They can help your business grow. Just reach out to them. Tell them I sent you. Tell them I sent you. They can help you. FirstLibertyGA.com. Build a relationship with them instead of with corporate brand manager nonsense who take over fields and ruin the names. Okay. We have a lot more to go on the Democratic primary. This is going to be a very busy show today. I got to be intentional with everything. But I also want to make time for the state legislature. At the bottom of the hour, Cole Muzio is going to join me from the Family Policy Alliance to talk about conservative legislation winding its way through the Georgia legislature this year. So we'll be dividing our time. We'll take your phone calls as well. The phone lines are open. The phone number is 877-97-ERIC. 877-973-7425 is the phone number. There's a report out from Politico while we're on the subject of the debate. Bernie Sanders' campaign admits anti-Warren script was deployed in multiple early states. The campaign initially attributed the talking points to rogue staffers and supporters, launched an online campaign to convince people the document was fake. The controversial talking points attacking Elizabeth Warren that Bernie Sanders' campaign deployed were given to teams in at least two early voting states on Friday, three Sanders campaign officials confirmed. Volunteers and staffers used the script on Saturday while canvassing for votes, meaning the talking points were more official than the Sanders campaign previously acknowledged. The campaign pulled back the script, which described Warren's appeal as limited to the highly educated and financially well off. That's actually true. Later on Saturday, after the story was published, we have hundreds of employees. Elizabeth Warren has hundreds of employees, and people sometimes say things they shouldn't. But it turns out that it actually was an official campaign document attacking Elizabeth Warren as a candidate with limited appeal. You know, that is she and Pete Buttigieg, that's actually true. Both of them are candidates that rich white people like, and that's about it. And the Sanders campaign is smart to point that out. Listen, there can be only one alternative to Joe Biden. And right now, the Democratic field is so crowded that they can't distinguish themselves in the pack. So Joe Biden continues to be the front runner. This is very much what happened to McCain in 2008 and Romney in 2012. And frankly, when Trump got ahead in 2016 on the Republican side, once someone really got ahead and started building a base of support, which Bernie already has, but which Joe Biden has in spades with black voters and with blue collar voters and with Obama loyalists, Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren have a real hard time trying to build a coalition base that can pick apart from Joe Biden's base and also hold their base together. There can only be one to challenge Joe Biden, and there are so many people in the field, and now you've got Bloomberg out there who's pouring money in, wasn't on the debate stage last night. Andrew Yang is still hanging on out there. Michael Bennett alleged Michael Bennett got James Carville's endorsement. I needed to needle James Carville for that. Bennett, I don't see ever having a chance. Who knew he was still in the campaign? And he's not going to go to Iowa either. Impeachment, by the way, is going to throw a whole wrench in this for the Democrats. But the fields are so crowded, it's preventing consolidation behind an alternative, and that helps Joe Biden, even though he has less money than the other candidates. When we come back, let's look at Georgia for a few minutes, and what are the big conservative items here in the state in the legislature? It is Eric Erickson here. So they've been having the eggs and issues breakfast this morning with all you can eat Chick-fil-A in Atlanta. We will get back to the Democratic debate here in a little bit. I'm waiting for Cole Muzio from the Family Policy Alliance to join me as well to talk about the issues he sees coming up in the legislature this year. So the chamber breakfast this morning, their big issue is going to be the film tax credit and also stopping major conservative initiatives. You do need to understand your local chamber of commerce tends to be, wherever you are in the state, tends to be more to the right of the Georgia Chamber of Commerce. The Georgia Chamber of Commerce is essentially an entity funded by Fortune 500 companies, which tend to lean left, and they're big into crony capitalism, and they are not very big into social conservatism. So they want lots of subsidies and breaks for major corporations in the state, and they don't really have a lot to do with Main Street and small entities in the state. That's actually one of my big criticisms of Nathan Deal and to a lesser extent Sonny Perdue, but really the Deal administration. I have a lot of good things to say about the Deal administration, but one of the major criticisms I had is that I often felt like they were taking policy positions that were designed to help major corporations at the expense of small and medium-sized corporations in the state of Georgia. Why help a small Georgia business become a big Georgia business when you could give all sorts of tax advantages and tax breaks to luring an already big business into the state of Georgia? And that seemed to be the approach. Instead of growing Georgia's economy by growing Georgia's businesses, the Deal administration seemed to want to grow Georgia's economy by attracting bigger businesses into the state of Georgia. And that put Georgia's own businesses at a competitive disadvantage. And oftentimes, the Georgia Chamber of Commerce was right there backing Deal in this, because you bring in another Fortune 500 company, well, that's someone else to join the Georgia Chamber of Commerce and give the Georgia Chamber of Commerce money. It's your Floyd County Chamber of Commerce, your Habersham County Chamber of Commerce, your Clark County Chamber of Commerce, Bibb County, wherever you are in the state, that really looks after the interests of the businesses in that community, of the small businesses and the big businesses in that community. And there's a disconnect there. There's a growing disconnect over time. But they had their Chamber of Commerce eggs and issues breakfast this morning in Atlanta on those business issues. And there is a lot of common ground among conservatives. And the common ground among conservatives, quite frankly, is we do believe in a free market. We don't believe in government subsidy. That affects the film tax credit issue because essentially it has become a subsidy of the film industry in Georgia. I know very few people. I know some. I do know some. But they're in the vast minority of people who want to get rid of the film tax credit. But I know a lot of people who recognize it needs to be reformed. Can it be reformed when you have an obstacle in Georgia, when you've got all the big businesses in the state aligned? A lot of big businesses in the state now also profit from it, because they can buy the tax credit from the Hollywood company and use it to offset their taxes. And that's something that's going to have to be looked at. There are other issues in the state as well, including the infrastructure issue. If we go back, I mentioned the news report from the end of 2019. The University of Georgia, in December of 2019, said they expected an economic slowdown this year. And one of the things they noted is that a lot of people aren't going to realize there's an economic slowdown because Atlanta's going to do just fine. It's going to be middle Georgia that suffers, and the further south you go from the Macon-Warner Robins area, the worse off it's going to be. You get down towards Adel, and you go out towards Bainbridge and Waycross, you're going to have even more trouble. Get into Taylor County, Macon County, down south, you're going to have trouble economically in the state. And then in the very northern part of the state as well, you're going to have trouble. The problem in the northern part of the state is it is beautiful. It is God's country. And because there are mountains, there's only so much flat land there to build on. You gotta make flat land to build in some cases. And that drives up costs there. But then they're closer to Atlanta. and you get down to South Georgia, there's a problem. You know, Allegiant Air has announced it's going to start regular flights into Savannah. In fact, where is this story? Pull up my Slack chat here because my buddy Philip put this in. It is Allegiant Air is going to start. Yes, this is from WMAZ in Macon has this story. Five new nonstop routes to Savannah International Airport. Allegiant is adding 44 new nonstop routes, including 14 routes to three new cities, Chicago, Boston, and Houston. There's a lot of leisure demand for cities that are regional destinations, and this route expansion will address some of those needs, Drew Wells, Allegiant Vice President for Planning, says. Also, this growth is about Allegiant being true to our mission and our company. To celebrate the largest expansion in Allegiant history, the company is offering one-way fares on new routes as low as $33. Now, the new nonstops will operate twice weekly coming out of Savannah. So the Savannah airport is going to grow, which is pretty impressive. Let's see. Let me get to the Savannah airport. I didn't know Gerald Ford had a airport named. I'm scrolling through this list here. So the Savannah airport, you're going to see flights. Let's see. Chicago Midway is going to go to Savannah. You're going to have Houston with Savannah. Seasonal routes to Savannah International Airport will include Bellevue, Illinois, Punta Gorda, Florida, New Bern, New York. In other words, you're going to continue to see economic development in the Savannah area. The airport there continues to grow commercially. You're going to see economic development in the Atlanta area. What do you do about the places that are not Savannah and Atlanta? Well, Columbus has Fort Benning, and military money helps stabilize Columbus. What about Macon, Warner Robins? Well, you've got Robins Air Force Base in Macon and Warner Robins, but it's not as big as some of the other facilities. You've got this major airport complex down in Middle Georgia that is supposedly there's development happening, corporate development happening, but not commercial aviation or anything of the like there. Where do you go to develop? What about Perry? What about Ford Valley? And then the other problem you have is if you look at the map of Georgia, while there are highway systems that are growing, you've got this US 80 corridor from Columbus over to Macon. You've got the development along, if you've never been down to Middle Georgia, I realize you have no idea what I'm talking about, but they're trying to build some major four-lane connection corridors from Columbus over to Augusta that wrap through Middle Georgia to try to help develop traffic. But, you know, you've also got the Augusta problem. Augusta, pretty big city, and even Augusta is having development issues. You've got the nuclear power plant near there. But this is part of our problem in the state, and it's something that the legislature has to deal with. When all of the state is falling behind except Atlanta, the media in the state, which is so Atlanta-centric, and the Chamber of Commerce in the state and others, they tend to ignore the growing poverty and problems in the rest of the state. And the governor is very actually mindful of this stuff because the governor won using the support of, with the support of, the people in South Georgia. The governor didn't win in Atlanta, and he knows this, and he knows he's got obligations to the rest of the state. And that's going to shape his policy. It's going to shape his education policy. It's going to shape his taxation policy. It's going to shape his health care policy. It's going to shape his economic development policy. There's a lot of land outside of Atlanta, particularly south of Atlanta, that can be developed. You know, between my house, so I live in Macon. If you ever drive south on 75, I go from Atlanta down to Macon. And when you get south of Forsyth in Monroe County, there's a huge tract of land there that they turned into a development area. And they've got Five Below. They've got a distribution facility for that area. And there's a lot of other land there that could be developed. But when you get down to Middle Georgia, what you find are a lot of distribution hubs. And the reason you find a lot of distribution hubs is because in Georgia, the Savannah and the Jacksonville ports are so crowded and there isn't a lot of development there. So they've built an inland port in Cordele, which is in South Georgia, about an hour south of Macon. And so by rail and by truck, they send cargo to Cordele, and that's where they go through customs and process it. And they can get it on the 75 corridor. They can get it by train. They can get it over to the 85 corridor in Alabama pretty easily by going Highway 80 through Columbus. Or they can go down to I-10, and they can cut across to Tallahassee and Lake City. They can go to Jacksonville. They can go all the way to California. The problem, though, is when you get outside of the Atlanta area and you get further south into these distribution areas, there's a Kohl's distribution facility, there's a Bass Pro distribution, you've got a number of other distributors, the Five Below. The distribution facilities, and now Amazon has one just south of Macon. There's a big Amazon facility that just opened. The problem with the distribution facilities is that they don't pay well. Typically, the majority of the employees are minimum wage employees. They have a small pool of management people who are better paid, but you don't have the high tech jobs. Now, in Middle Georgia, there's an airport there, the Middle Georgia Regional Airport, and they've got an Embraer. I think it's called Embraer. It's the Brazilian airline company. They've got a hub there. There used to be a Bombardier facility there. Before that, there was an ASA facility there before Delta shut it down. And that pays well. There was a Boeing facility there. The Boeing facility has been winding down there. So where do you get these well-paid jobs outside of the Atlanta area now, other than Savannah and to some degree Columbus because of the military situation there? Maybe some in Athens. You get some in Athens because you got the University of Georgia there. Maybe a few in Valdosta because you got Moody down there. But you've got this entire expanse of the state where there are great colleges and universities. You got Georgia College and State University. You got Middle Georgia. You got Georgia Southern in Statesboro. But where do you build economic hubs, and where can you build aviation hubs where people can go to and get out of other than Atlanta and Savannah and the state? And that's part of the problem. Now, Delta has expanded flights into Columbus and Valdosta, Brunswick and Savannah, back and forth, and I believe Albany as well, back and forth to Atlanta. So you can get in and out of the state by getting to a regional airport that then goes into Atlanta. Macon now has a flight service to Washington, D.C. You actually go into Baltimore. But see, you've got these infrastructure transportation challenges and that are more complicated, and you've got a lot of infrastructure around the state, not in the metro area in Atlanta, that are distribution facilities that don't pay well, and so you're propping up a lot of infrastructure without a lot of depth of a tax base there to help it. And the state's really going to have to figure out some economic incentives to stop having people be in Atlanta and start moving them out of Atlanta. There's only so much real estate left in Atlanta, and frankly, you've got huge traffic infrastructure problems in the city of Atlanta as well. So whether it's going up to Rome, which is gorgeous, I mean, man, I could live in Rome. Listen, to those of you up on WRGA listening right now, I love your city, and I do not get up there enough. You have a fantastic downtown. You've got an outfitter store right there on the river. What is it? Broad Street in Rome. It's wonderful. If you have not taken a day or two, get an Airbnb, go up to Rome. I love it in Rome. I used to go up to Rome all the time. I ran a congressional campaign out of the 11th congressional district back in the day, and spent a lot of time drinking beer in downtown Rome, running a campaign and lots of coffee. I love it up there. It is fantastic. Then you've got Dalton, which is close to Chattanooga, which is just exploding. But again, you've got a lot of mountainous land. Where do you develop? When you get down into middle and south Georgia, what you find is a lot more farms, but farms aren't doing well economically. You got a lot more land to play with. But frankly, honestly, if we were really honest about it, those of you who know, you know. The incompetence of the government of Bibb County down in Macon is phenomenal. I mean, this goes back generationally. It goes back to the Olympics, where the city of Macon, in the middle of the state of Georgia, with two major interstates connected into it, never even put on an Olympic event in 1996 because the city-county government couldn't get its act together. And several years ago, they finally decided to consolidate the area in middle Georgia, in Bibb County, and they're still freaking incompetent when it comes to stuff. I mean, they are leaving themselves behind because nobody can get on the same page. The whole area is fueled with grievance. You've got an airport there that they've handed over to the Development Authority to develop, and to some degree they're developing it and they're bringing in some business. But dear God, frankly, the way Middle Georgia goes is the way Macon Warner Robins goes. And if Macon Warner Robins can get its act together, then the rest of it, whether it's Dublin or Perry or even out in Gray, could get themselves together. If you don't live in that area, you don't understand. Now, if you're north of I-20, you're fairly competently managed. If you're south of I-20, I mean, you get into Middle Georgia, you got some issues. And that makes the rest of Middle and South Georgia suffer because you've got major metropolitan areas that are anchors to those parts of the state that are incompetently run. And that makes everybody else suffer. Why would a Fortune 500 company want to go to Middle Georgia when essentially you've got a Macon-Bibb County government that wants to shake you down? They're going to go to Columbus or they're going to go to Savannah. They're going to stay in Atlanta. They're going to go to Athens. And all this land south of I-20 is ripe for good development and good infrastructure and good jobs, and the government in that area just doesn't help. And they're getting left behind. So now you've got UGA coming out and saying this part of the state is going to get hit with recessionary effects in the next year, and nobody's going to notice because Atlanta's going to be doing really well. And that's unfortunate because that spillover effect is going to affect a lot of people, and it's going to affect state tax revenue. It's going to affect all of the governor's plans. It's going to affect the desire for teacher pay raises. And the legislature is going to have to do something about it. And unfortunately, as they're meeting with their eggs and issues breakfast at the Chamber of Commerce this morning in Atlanta, the major Georgia Chamber of Commerce is so Atlanta-focused that even they're not paying attention to the issue. And it's going to be the people of Middle and South Georgia who are really going to have to take matters into their own hands. And some of them are just going to have to get past grievances to try to pick it up and move on.
As both sides target Georgia for 2020, Eric gives you the news you need from a Georgia perspective.
Well, I'm afraid Cole was held up. We will get back to Cole and go through his legislative agenda. I want to get back into the Democratic debate, having now given you my dissertation on some of the problems out there. Mike Bloomberg is trying to get traction during the Democratic debate. He went on Stephen Colbert's show last night. I have been on the Colbert Report. If you remember Stephen Colbert's original Colbert Report, let me tell you how it worked for me, and it gives you a sense of how this operates. And I'm sure it didn't operate that way with Bloomberg, and that Colbert doesn't necessarily do this anymore. But I was interviewed by the Colbert Report. To come on, I had just gotten hired by CNN in the end of 2009, was going to go on 2010 on Colbert, and they went through an interview with me of all of the topics that might be of interest, and that was the first interview, and they said they'd call back in 3 days, and they called back in 3 days, and they said they had narrowed down the topics to the three that they thought Stephen Colbert would be most interested in. And so we went through a second interview, and we focused on just those three topics that Stephen would be interested in. And then they said, now that they had kind of the outline of the parameters, he only had time to focus on one, and they wanted to go, they would call me back after they had met with him in the days before the show, and they would go through in-depth detail with me. And so they went back in 2010, they went in-depth issue with me. And I can't even remember. It was the 2010 election, and how did I think Republicans were going to be able to leverage that, particularly when people really did need healthcare reform in the country? And we did a probably 30-minute interview on the phone with his producer, and then they flew me to New York. I got into the room. It was a great room, great people. He's very, very nice. He came in, met with me. This was the topic they wanted to cover. They spent a little more time. Here's his angle. Here's what he's going to go. I get out on set. We sit down for the interview, and it is absolutely nothing about what we had discussed. It was actually personal about me, and it completely threw me for a loop. And everybody said I did great. They said I did great. It was totally ambush interview. And he was a very nice guy. His staff were very nice, and I came away feeling like I had been played. And, of course, I had been played, given what they had done. And he would never, ever, ever do that to a Democrat, I assure you. He would never do that to someone on the left. He has since gone to CNN, and he's turned political comedy into a thing. He is a man. You know, there's something to be said for the number of people in the United States who have made a career off of hating Donald Trump. Now, he made his career before Trump, but it really this nightly show on CBS for Stephen Colbert, where he took over from Dave Letterman, he has made it all about Donald Trump. All of his comedy is political comedy, and for the left, who have embraced politics as religion, it works for them for now. But then you go beyond Colbert. You've got this new Lincoln group that has started up. It's a bunch of disaffected Republicans who are out to get Donald Trump, and anyone who says anything nice about him, they're willing to burn him down to the ground. And they got some friends of mine who are there, and I don't mean disrespect to them, but I'm shocked by the number of people who are also affiliated who are completely unsuccessful, failed at life, and the only thing they're good at is preying on the vanities of anti-Trump donors. Whole careers have been built out of opposing Donald Trump. I mean, you want to know why the economy is doing so well? All of these people who could otherwise not work have jobs attacking the president of the United States, and they owe their livelihoods to him, and yet they hate his guts, and it's deeply ironic. They can't even remember it, can't even recognize it.
Spin your passion into a business with Shopify and break sales records with the world's best converting checkout. Let's hear that one more time. The world's best converting checkout. Shopify's legendary checkout makes it easier for customers to shop on your website, across social media, and everywhere in between. Now that's music to your ears. Any way you spin it, you can be a smash hit with Shopify. Start your $1 a month trial today at shopify.com/records.